eBay sellers, you have landed on episode number 164 of eBay the Right Way. Today's date is May 8th, 2024, and my guest is Dan in Maryland. Announcements? Nothing notable this week, so we will dive into the conversation with Dan.
Welcome back, listeners. I have Dan with us today, and you reached out to come on the podcast and share your wisdom spanning many years.
Yeah. I've been selling online since the early 90s, actually selling on CompuServe in the pre-eBay days.
Okay.
That was how I got hooked on online selling. I went to a garage sale and bought, I don't know if you're familiar with Aurora model kits, like the model kits of the monsters, like, you know, Dracula and the Wolfman
from
the Black Lagoon, things like that. So I bought a bunch of models that had been already built up. And then the woman also had a Hunchback of the Notre Dame model, glow in the dark, sealed in the box. And I paid a whopping 50 cents for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold it on to somebody on CompuServe. And I still remember the exact amount, $125. And they threw in a Partridge Family board game that I also sold. So I was like, wait a second. So I can go to garage sales and buy stuff and then sell it to other people all over the country. So I started doing that on CompuServe and then got on eBay like in probably like 98, 99, about that time.
Okay. Isn't it great when you have that epiphany of I can do this anytime I want.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah. And it worked out perfectly for me because right around 2002, I'm a graphic designer and a writer. And around that time I moved from Pennsylvania to Maryland to be with my then girlfriend who we're now married for 20 years. But I moved down here and I decided I was going to freelance. I was going to strike out on my own. So I had a lot of free time between finding clients and doing client work. And so eBay became like a whole secondary source of income for me. And in 2004, my parents decided to move from the house that our family had lived in for over 40 years. And they moved into a retirement community, assisted living. And, you know, my mom was, I think the term that I would use for her is an organized hoarder. So, you know, she was a hoarder, but you didn't really see it around the house. Like she kept it very well contained. There was like one spare bedroom, you know, on the second floor where everything was kind of hidden. And, you know, closets were full and the basement had stuff and things like that. And our garage was a mess. But like the rest of the house was immaculate. But like these couple of other areas were where she would, you know, keep all of this stuff. My mom couldn't turn down a bargain. So my brother and I spent 2 weeks cleaning out the house, selling anything that nobody wanted, and then taking any of the things that we thought had potential to do well on eBay. And so that really, it did two things. It cured my desire to acquire any more stuff. I was always a collector, you know, books, records, Atari cartridges, vintage recipe pamphlets and cookbooks, things like that, Simpsons toys. And, you know, cleaning out a house that your parents have lived in for 40 years really kind of cures that urge to just acquire stuff. Like I didn't want any more stuff. If it wasn't something I was going to eventually sell, I didn't want it in the house, you know? So, that, you know, that also helped me really build up my eBay inventory. Like we eventually had to get a storage unit because we couldn't keep it all in the house. So, you know, between the items that I had gotten from my parents' house and the things that I was picking up on my own, you know, I had a nice little eBay business going. And, you know, and that's really how it started. And it's just kind of, you know, been a secondary job that I really love ever since. You know, I always say if money were no object, it's what I would do 24/7.
Me too. And we jumped in really quick. We didn't talk about where you're located.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I live just outside of Baltimore in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And I'm originally from the Philadelphia area in South Jersey. My wife and I are both from there. And we ended up here in Maryland. And we've been here for over 20 years.
Okay. So you're in the same state as Eileen, the book lady.
Oh, okay. Yep.
After talking to my eBay friends for so many years, it's like, I know where people are located. I know their pets' names. I know it all. So
there you go. It's funny. I mean, it is an interesting community, you know, yeah. And it's what I love about it. What I love about your group and I love about other, eBay groups, thrifting groups, is that people are so willing to share their knowledge. Mm-hmm. I tend to really stay in my lanes. Like there's the things that I really like to sell. I love to sell books and records and CDs, DVDs. That's kind of, my lane. But I always know that if I find something that's not in my comfort zone, I'm always able to find somebody who's willing to give me advice on, that's what that is. Here's what you should price it at, that kind of thing, which I think is awesome.
Right. Well, and it wasn't like that in the early days. I don't know if you ever went on the eBay community boards back in the day when people were very territorial about this business and they did not want to help new people.
Absolutely not.
They were very threatened. And that was way back 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been selling?
I started selling in 2003.
Okay.
Yeah. So and that's kind of one of the reasons that drives my education, the educational products and the groups and stuff that I do. It's like, there's enough out there for everybody.
Right. Absolutely. And back in
the day when there were so many fewer sellers than now, there was really no reason to be territorial because you didn't have as many people competing for products out there in the world. But, the waste stream is never going to stop. It's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger.
Yep.
Back to now with social media and all the different communities. Yeah, they are different on Facebook even, but.
Well, and that's what I found. I mean, your group, and there's one other group that I really like, and I've kind of whittled it down to those two because a lot of the other ones, the personalities of people just, come out in some awful ways. And it's like, I don't have time for that.
Right. Yeah. But most people are willing to help. And that really was not the way back in the beginning on those eBay community boards. True. I don't even think they were monitored. And I would ask questions and people would just be so hateful. And it's like, okay. So anyway, enough of that. You post a lot on the group. So let's talk about some things you've sold.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, I know that we got talking because I had posted, I had a run of like selling VHS tapes for some reason. I had a period where I was a freelance writer. I love movies. I love horror movies. I love cult movies. So I'm, anytime that I go to a sale, I'm always looking for kind of obscure VHS, DVDs, any of those things. And it was so funny because, and I'm sure you know what this is like, you're looking for one thing and you open up a box and you're like, gosh, I forgot I even had these things, And so one weekend I just was like, I'm going to put these VHS tapes up and see what happens. And I ended up selling, I sold a Yellow Submarine Beatles VHS that someone had given me because I helped her out with her garage sale after her husband died. She gave me a whole box of stuff that I was interested in. And she was like, don't even pay me for it. Just take it. But I sold the Yellow Submarine for like $20. And then I had another one. It was a film. I don't know if you're familiar with Barbie Benton. She was
a
playmate. Well, she made this movie in the early 1970s called The Naughty Cheerleader. And it was kind of like it was just kind of like a risque comedy thing. And that was another one that I bought for like $1 at some sale and sold that one for $30. And then the big sale was there. It's a It's one of the craziest movies I've ever seen. It's called Raw Force, and it's a kung fu cannibal zombie martial arts action movie. It's just, it's outrageous. And I, another one I picked up at a library sale for $1, and I think I put it up for $75 and took $50, I think. And it sold like within 48 hours. So, you know, those are just some of my recent sales. One of my best finds lately was I was at a garage sale last fall, and there was a big paper box, you know, you would get like a ream of paper in, and it was full of Stephen King hardback novels. And so I asked the people who were selling, it turns out they were selling these things. It was the gentleman's sister's house. She had passed away. And I said, well, how much for the Stephen King books? And he said, I need $10. And I thought $10 each. And even at $10 each, I was like, oh, sure, all in. And he was like, no, $10 for the whole box. So far on that $10 investment, I've made $500 on just 8 of the books. I think I still have probably 10 books left in the box. And it drives one of my friends crazy because he'll go online, like he'll go on Amazon and he'll say, well, why did somebody, you know, pay you $50 for a copy of Christine? I could buy a copy of Christine for $10. And I'm like, well, yeah, but you're not a collector. You know, you're not interested in maybe a newer copy of, or a lower printing of Christine, or a special edition of Christine. So the Stephen King box has been one of my greatest finds of late.
That sounds great. Now, do you know about the other name he writes under?
Oh, Richard Bachman. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. In fact, I think the best selling book out of the lot so far was they did a collection of the Bachman books. And that one sold for $100. And part of the reason is that Rage, one of the books, is no longer included when they do the reprints of the Bachman books. They usually don't include Rage because it's about a school shooting, and he doesn't want that to be in there. So if you find a copy of the Bachman books that includes Rage, it's a really good seller.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Moving is right up there with death and divorce in the stress Olympics. But fear not. Turn that box of woes into a crate of woes with moving tips in the Life Beyond Boxes podcast with Premium Q Moving. Dive into the world of hassle-free moves, learn tips and tricks to save on cash and your sanity. Say goodbye to those moving meltdowns and hello to the smooth sailings. Or should we say smooth movings? Tune into Life Beyond Boxes with Premium Q Moving on lifebeyondboxes.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. And with us, unpack the secrets to a stress-free move.
Yeah, and it's my understanding he wrote under that name after he became famous to see if his books were selling because he's famous or if they're really actually good. It's good writing.
I think actually a part of it is that he's a super prolific writer, especially in his early days. And I think he was writing so much stuff that he needed a pseudonym to generate, you know, additional income. So he was writing stuff as Stephen King, and he was also writing stuff as Richard Bachman for different magazines and other publications because he was just so prolific. But yeah, if you find any of the Bachman books, like in their original paperback form, that's like a license to print money. So one of, you know, but yeah, the funny thing is that another one of my best sales lately was thanks to my teenage daughter, who has gotten the thrift bug from me. In fact, she and I have a morning of garage sales planned for tomorrow. But she and I were at a sale last year, and we had picked up some things from this person, and you know, some glasses, and she kind of elbowed me and she said, "Hey, Dad, what's that?" And I looked down, and it was a Dukes of Hazzard pillow and sheet set, still in the packaging. And the woman had $10 marked on it, but she had it kind of like shoved under a table. So I asked her, I said, you know, is that for sale? Are you holding that for someone? And so she said that she was embarrassed to have it out because it had the rebel flag. And she said, yeah, she said, I didn't even want to put it on Facebook Marketplace, or, she said, I felt kind of uncomfortable about it. I said, well, I'll take it for $10. No problem. And I ended up selling it for $375.
I believe that.
And gave my daughter a $40 cut.
Yeah. Gave her a finder's fee.
A little finder's fee.
Yeah. And Dukes of Hazzard, that's iconic. And just a little funny side story. I have one of my best friends in life. We've known each other since we were 6 years old. We're still best friends now. She went to University of Georgia, but on her Facebook profile for education, she has Dukes of Hazzard driving school.
They always move the steering wheel a whole lot for, that's one of the things that I always remember from the show.
And she drives, when she turned 16, her dad bought her either a 65 or a 66 Camaro convertible, wow, red with a white top. And we drove around in that. And I believe she had many, many high school boys interested in her for that car.
I would imagine.
She still does car shows and everything now.
Oh, that's cool.
With her husband, who has a 70 something VW Beetle. But it's a big joke in the South. It's like the Hazzard stuff. It's pretty collectible. I have some of those. What do you call them? Viewmaster.
Oh, sure.
Hazard, the real things that you put in the viewer. I've sold some of those just because it had Dukes of Hazzard on it. It wasn't even all that valuable. So,
right.
But you're right. People do shy away from some of the sensitive items, I guess, but history is history. It was a popular show.
Right. It's a popular show. And
out there that collect it. Yeah.
That's exactly it. I always tell people, because, my friends are always fascinated by the stuff that I'm selling and, what I've picked up and what's going on. And I always tell them, I said, there's a collector for everything. Like, you just have to find that one person. Like, if you can find that one, even better if you can find two, but if you can find that one person,
yeah,
that's the key to selling anything.
Right. Okay. Great story. What else you got?
My dad worked for, a trucking company back in the 1960s and 70s. He retired in the 1980s, but he was a claims supervisor for this trucking company. And so his job was anything that got damaged in shipment would come back to the terminal, and he would, determine how much of a refund the client would get. And typically anything that was returned, they would just kind of collect it all. And anybody who worked at the terminal could go through it and, pick and choose and take anything home. My dad was not, he was a very thrifty guy. He was born in Scotland. He came from kind of a, meager upbringings. So he was a very thrifty individual. And for some reason, he brought home a box of Dunkin' Donuts mugs. In fact, I still have one. I'll show you. Fire King.
Yeah, Fire King.
So when we were cleaning out the house, I brought back a box of these 12 Dunkin' Donuts mugs. And so I kept one for myself. I think my brother took one. And so I photographed it, listed one on, and sold it. So I was like, great. Was watching a football game or something. List another one. 15 minutes later, sold. Same person. So I was like, okay. Listed another one, slightly higher price. 5 minutes later, sold to the same person. So finally, I was just like, well, this is silly. I'm just going to email them. And I contacted him. I said, I have 9 more of these. Like, how many of these do you want? And he said, I'll take all of them, not for his own collection, but for him to trade with other mug collectors.
Oh.
So I ended up sending a box of, like, I think 10 of these Dunkin' Donuts mugs to Hawaii. Luckily, I think only one or two of them got damaged in transit, even though they were, you know, super well packed. They went from Maryland to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was just one of those crazy sales where I was like, well, this is really interesting. Like, you know, 15 minutes later and then 5 minutes later. And so eventually he ended up buying the whole box, which was awesome.
Do you remember how much you made on that sale?
I think the first one I sold for 30. I think the second one was like 35, and then the third one was 45. And then we just did a package deal for the remainder of the box. So, you know, for something I took out of my parents' garage, I did pretty well on it.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I never thought about collectors using their merchandise as currency to barter. Right.
Well, and that's what struck me. I was like, why does this guy want, you know, a second one of these and a third one of these? And that was when he told me, he said, you know, he'll use them to get, he didn't want any of them. He had them already. He just wanted to use them for trade with other Fire King and, you know, coffee mug collectors.
There you go.
Again, find that one person.
Oh, I love that story. That's great. Okay, what else? So do you specialize in anything, or are you just open to selling whatever?
I don't really specialize. I mean, I have niches, you know. So about 50% of my inventory is things that I've picked up, or, you know, is my own personal stuff that I'm flipping. And probably about 50% is things that I have gotten on consignment from other people. You know, once people found out, you know, you're talking, having, you know, a beer with somebody, or you're out on the golf course and you're talking about selling stuff, and people are intimidated by trying to sell on eBay. I'm sure you've encountered that. You know, people think that there's, oh my gosh, there's so many steps to it. I've got to research this. I've got to come up with a price. I've got to, you know, then I've got to ship it. How do I get the money? So it kind of fell in my lap where people were going, well, would you be interested in selling some stuff for me? So I had a friend who worked in the entertainment business, and he was downsizing. And so I ended up selling posters, signed copies of scripts, DVDs, action figures, just any of these kinds of things that he had acquired over the years. And then I have another friend who is a huge physical media collector, loves movies, but he's always upgrading. So he went from VHS to DVD to Blu-ray. Now he's going from Blu-ray to, you know, ultra HD. And so every, you know, few months, he'll give me like 8 banker's boxes full of DVDs and Blu-rays for me to sell. It's great traffic for my store. I have nothing invested in it, so whatever I make off of it is just extra money. He's happy because it's out of his house. So, you know, I don't, like I say, books, records, DVDs, I love things that fit into nice, easily mailable envelopes. That I can just put it in, put some tape on it, smack a label on it, and out it goes. I don't have to find a box. I don't have to do any, you know, hard packaging. I know I always love the stories of people making these, you know, Franken boxes, you know, that they're creating, you know, a box out of 5 boxes to ship this thing to Timbuktu. But, you know, I always look for those small things. Like, we went to a estate sale last week. And that was like, I found some Hot Wheels, and I was like, oh, great. That'll go in a real small.
Oh, love that.
And off it goes. What else did we get? Oh, we got color forms. You know, we got a Miss Piggy color form and a Barbie Western color form. And they're not complete, but they're still great. They're from the early 80s, and someone will pay for them.
Yeah. And for the listeners, color forms were, I don't think they make them anymore. They're like these little vinyl sticky things that you, they come on like a cardboard vinyl thing, and you peel them off.
And they were little, and they were little, you would create these little scenes, or with the Miss Piggy and the Barbie one, they're kind of like paper dolls. Like, it comes with like a stand up thing. And then you would put you'd put a top on it, and you'd put a hat.
It's like
on
a two dimensional Barbie. I mean, they had everything, Smurfs and Strawberry Shortcake.
Oh gosh. I mean, I remember I had the Batman one, and I know
I had them growing up.
They did Flintstones and, you know, what so many different, whatever character was hot, they did a color forms of.
And so, it was all fun until the dog chewed up your favorite Barbie dress. Well, it was like, oh, this is great, but it has all these teeth marks in it.
Teeth marks in it, right. Yeah, well, we bought the two of them at the garage sale. And of course, like, I think one of them has like 15 of the 18 pieces and one of them has 12 of the 15 pieces. Like, they're never complete, you know? Mm-hmm. There's always something that got lost along the way.
Yes, exactly. So wait, let me ask you what year you were born.
So I was born in 1966.
Oh, okay. Me too. Great.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So we have all the same memories of the crazy toys and like stuff that we played with that, yep, now the kids would be like, oh, that is so lame. How did you put it on? Where's the electronic? And it was like, it wasn't.
Well, and I was lucky because I'm the youngest kid of five and we're spread over 20 years. So my oldest sister is 20 years older than me. She was born in 1946. And then I have two older brothers who are 6 years and 8 years older than me. So I was lucky enough to get all their hand-me-down toys. So like I had, you know, growing up, I had the James Bond attaché case and all these vintage G.I. Joes. And I don't know, do you remember the Johnny West figures that Marx put out?
I don't know.
They were probably about, I want to say they were like 12 inches tall. And there was Johnny West and he had a girlfriend who was Jane West. And they had the villain was Sam Cobra. And they made, they even made James West from the Wild Wild West TV show.
Okay. So
they made one that looked like Robert Conrad. But my mom, my God bless her. So she, at the end of the day, great, you played with it, whatever, put everything back together. So when we're cleaning out the house and we're helping my parents, to have these garage sales and moving sales, like you'd go and you'd find there'd be a bag. And the bag would have all the accessories in it. And it would have the instruction sheet that came with the toys. No boxes, but you would have, I had Johnny West, Jane West, Geronimo, Sam Cobra, all these things, plus all the accessories. And, and the accessories, the first thing to go with any of those toys. And, God bless my mother, had, kept all of these things for all of these years. And, and so like that was one of those things that my wife and I tried to instill in our daughter when she was growing up, like, it's great, play with all this stuff, but take care of this stuff because A, you may want to keep it for posterity when you grow up, right? Or you may want to sell it and make a little extra money. And if you have all the pieces, it's a little easier to sell. So it was a great life lesson I learned from my mother that we've tried to pass down to our daughter.
Very good. I remember my brother had, I have one brother and he's 2 years younger than me. So we played a lot. We were the two middle kids and he had G.I. Joe, but he got into like firecrackers and stuff. So he would, put a firecracker under G.I. Joe and blow him up in the sky. So he turned into like, disabled G.I. Joe with one arm and stuff. Well,
and good for those people, because when they get older, they want the toys that they had when they were kids.
Right.
And they don't want the one that's got the blown off hand. Like,
this is like real life G.I. Joe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not
right.
Like only in the box G.I. Joe. Some, yep, people are like, I wasn't even allowed to take it out of the box. But that and Matchbox cars and army men, he would just, he and his friend would go in the backyard and do firecrackers. And it was just, that was being an 80s kid. You just went off into the backyard or the woods and, they built the Evel Knievel ramps and stuff. I'm surprised we lived through our childhood in the 80s because, no seat belts and just go outside and play, kids.
My wife and I laugh about it because, when school was out, that was like, I was on the swim team at our swim club. And so I would get up in the morning, I would ride to the pool for swim team practice. I would stay at the pool all day. I'd come home to deliver my newspapers for my newspaper route, have dinner, and then ride my bike back to the pool. Like that was my day from June until September, from, you know, Memorial Day to Labor Day. That's what I did every day. My parents had no idea where I was going. You know, I was like, you know, I'm riding my bike to the mall. I'm riding my bike to the library. It's amazing we survived.
Yeah. And like we had a creek in our neighborhood. So it was, you know, throwing stuff in the creek, you know, the Barbies and the G.I. Joes and sometimes your little sister, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
My creek fell in the creek. Oh, she'll be all right. Dry her off. She's all right.
So my brothers were basketball players. And so we had a neighborhood basketball court where everybody from the surrounding towns all came and played. And there was a creek that ran behind the court. And so as the little brother, my job was to go retrieve the ball from the creek. And then at our swim club, the volleyball court was all the way in the back of the swim club. So if the ball went over the fence and into the creek, nobody wanted to walk all the way around. Mm-hmm. So what they would do is, of course, they would pull up the fence and the little brother would get to slide under the fence in you know, the woods of suburban New Jersey, slide under the fence to go find the volleyball and come back and then, you know, have to slide back. I still have scars on my arms and on my back where somebody didn't pull the fence up high enough and I got caught on it. But, you know, that's the role of the little brother.
Yeah, those were the days when we weren't glued to electronics and stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what else do you have on your list to talk about?
Well, let's see, another classic one it wasn't a huge sale, but it was one of those just serendipitous moments. My wife grew up on Long Beach Island, New Jersey, which is a barrier island just off the coast of New Jersey. Like it's where a lot of people from Philadelphia and New York go to vacation. So her parents still have a place there year round. So we usually go up when my daughter's on spring break. And even though, you know, it's, you know, March or April at that time, we still love to go up. It's a little quieter. There's not as much stuff open, but there's a bookstore that we love. And, you know, my daughter loves to read. So she always wants to go to the book swap whenever we're on the island. And so we walked in, this is a couple years ago, and we walked in and they had a shelf over on the side and it was all biographies and autobiographies. And I'm a big James Bond fan. Love the James Bond movies. That was one of the first things I collected as a kid was the all the James Bond paperbacks, the original Ian Fleming books. And I walked in and I looked over and I saw, I can't remember what the exact title of it is, but it's Roger Moore's autobiography. I think it was My Word is My Bond, I think is what the title of it was. So it was Roger Moore's autobiography. And I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if this was autographed? And pulled it off the shelf. And sure enough, it's autographed by Roger Moore, who played James Bond for years and years and years. And, you know, you grew up at the same time I did. He was kind of our James Bond. You know, we were too young for Sean Connery, but we were just the right age for Roger Moore.
Right.
And so sure enough, like this thing is signed. I did a little research. I was like, yeah, he did all of these book signings and that's his signature. And that's where he would sign it. Like there was a spot on the title page that he loved to sign it. And I only ended up selling it for $45, but it was still just such a neat, you know, moment that I walked in and was just like, wouldn't it be funny if that was autographed? And it's, and I've had a couple of, you know, those over the years where, we had a thrift store here, and it must have been someone who was a sports reporter in Pittsburgh, because I walked in one day and there were all of these Pittsburgh-centric sports books. So books by, you know, Rocky Blyer and Terry Bradshaw and, you know, guys who played for the Steelers in the 70s and guys from the Pittsburgh Penguins. And like half of them were signed. And this guy must, you know, I don't Unfortunately, he may have passed away and his family didn't know what to do with the books and just donated Goodwill. I was fortunate enough to be there the day that they had put them out on the shelf and ended up like getting all of these, you know, Rocky Blyer and, you know, all these signed Pittsburgh books that, that, you know, ended up getting sold. So, you know, it's just, it's, you know, you never know what you're going to find. You know,
How long ago was that?
That was years. That was years ago when I first moved here to Baltimore. I think that was probably early 2000s.
So it's probably different now. I mean, people are still finding things that's still through.
But yeah, absolutely. It's not the fertile hunting grounds that it used to be. But so I've got a job back in the corporate world. But my office is right around the corner from a Goodwill. And so my one coworker, he always laughs because I usually go on Wednesdays because it's senior discount day. Mm-hmm. And I get my 30% off at
30. That's good.
Yeah. So here in Maryland, Goodwill is Wednesdays. And do you have Savers? No,
I'm in Illinois now. So,
okay. So Savers, is another thrift store chain that we have. They do their discount day on Tuesdays, but they're also 30%. And, you know, so like if my daughter's on vacation or whatever, she loves to go with me. She's got a good eye and, you know, but she also collects stuff too. Like she's a big, she's an old soul. So she loves Audrey Hepburn. She loves Marilyn Monroe. She loves Gregory Peck. You know, she came home yesterday. She got in the car yesterday when I picked her up from school. And the first thing she said to me was, "Dad, is Apocalypse Now a good movie?" And I said, "Yeah, why?" She was like, "Well, we were talking about Vietnam today in school and you know, the Apocalypse Now came up." And she said, "I love the Godfather movie, the first two Godfather movies. I feel like I should see Apocalypse Now." So she came home and she made herself some mango and yogurt and she sat there and she watched Apocalypse Now. But it was the funniest part was I was in my office and she was out in the living room, and every once in a while I would hear, "Oh my God, Robert Duvall was in this? Whoa, Marlon Brando was in this?
Oh my gosh, she knows all them."
Oh, she does. My wife is a huge film fan as well. She's more of a classic film fan. So they watch a lot of, you know, the black and white movies. My daughter's favorite movie of all time used to be The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Now it's When Harry Met Sally.
That's my favorite.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, that's funny.
She has a huge Ghost and Mrs. Muir movie poster in her bedroom. Loves Ghost and Mrs. Muir.
Oh, yes. And who's the male actor?
It's Rex Harrison, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Like, yeah, I remember as a little kid, you know, middle school age, my sister and I would watch that. Just we were fascinated with the ghost aspect of it, the supernatural. And it was just such a nice.
Oh, it's
story. And, you know, at the very end when she drops the glass of milk and then they become young again. It's just, oh, I just love that movie.
Yeah, my daughter adores that movie. So, you know, so she's gotten it from both my wife and I. Like my wife is, like I said, much more of the classic film fan. I'm more of like the horror and action film fan. So, you know, my daughter's kind of a blend of the two of us, which is so fun.
That's great. Good for you. Okay. Any other stories?
You know, that was about all the ones that I had jotted down, some of the more memorable stuff.
Oh, I know. It was about Goodwill and how it's evolved over the years. And, I think you just have to keep changing your strategy because, I've discovered where I live now, they have a 99 cent day on Monday where it's the oldest color tag. And they actually did that in Georgia and South Carolina too. But I sort of shifted picking up things I wouldn't normally sell when they're a dollar instead of $6. You know, that's different.
Right.
And good bread and butter type items. And you just have to learn the discounts. Here in Illinois, one different thing is if you like their Facebook page for the individual stores, they send out a coupon on Fridays. It may be 20% off boutique stuff. It may be whatever. But and then they have teacher discounts, which I hadn't seen that before. I'm sure it's in plenty of other states. And of course, Senior Day. but they keep raising the senior age. So now we got to go get fake IDs to prove we're
I must say that the people that I work with, they always get a kick out of the fact that I get carded at the Goodwill and have to prove that I'm whatever it's 50. I think it's 55. Mm-hmm. And so I always have my driver's license ready so that I can prove that I'm 55. You know, the thing about the Goodwill around us is that, you know, like for a while there, they had tons of records. And good records, you know. So I was going in and I was picking up things like, I don't know if you remember there's a movie called The Endless Summer. It's a documentary about surfing.
Uh-huh.
From the 1960s, has a great surf instrumental soundtrack. And, you know, I picked up a copy for, you know, I picked it up on senior day and probably paid $1.30 for it and sold it for $45.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an I Love Lucy. It was musical memories of I Love Lucy. And it was just all the different songs that they had done on the show. So, you know, Baba Lou, and there was a song about whatever the little Desi. And so there were all it was an album of nothing but songs from I Love Lucy. And again, picked it up for $1.30, sold it for probably $40. So I was like, I was hitting that Goodwill every Wednesday and walking out with a stack of records, stack of records, stack of records. And then a couple of weeks ago stopped and all the records are gone. Like they're like not even any bins for the records anymore. So I'm like, where did the records go? You know, what, like, did they just stop getting donations of records, or are they getting donations of records and just getting rid of them, which is what I hope they're not doing. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'll go in on a, you know, a Wednesday at lunchtime, but I'll stand there and I'll take every CD off of the shelf. Cause I mean, I'm always looking for soundtracks. I'm always looking for anything that's like new wave or punk rock. Cause I was a college radio DJ in the 80s. So I'm familiar with all of, you know, all of those bands, you know, any heavy metal stuff, almost anything sealed, I'll buy for a couple bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm always hoping that I'll find something that's autographed. You know, you can't see that if you're looking at the spine. So I'll take them off and one at a time, just go through them and set aside anything that looks good. I'll take my phone, I'll scan them real quick and, you know, and see if there's anything worthwhile. But yeah, you really have, you know, and some stores, like the one store I typically go to, their DVD and VHS selection is atrocious. Like it's Titanic, it's Sister Act, you know, it's just the normal stuff that you'll find anytime. But there's a Savers that's a few miles away. And I've gone in there and I've found great VHS collections of action movies and horror movies that just were sitting right there. So I guess you never know what you're going to find in each different area. So it's a volume shooter thing. Like you gotta keep going back because you just never know what you're going to find.
And I think media is like clothing. When people donate it, they donate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like they clean out, you
right.
know, and one example is, I'm still great friends with my high school English teacher. And when I was in Atlanta, I went to her house one time, it's been the past couple of years. And, her husband is a big record album collector, media collector. So we went down to the basement and I mean, it is just, it's like a record store. It's just, and then like, oh, these tubs over here, he hasn't gone through yet. And she's like, I don't know what we're going to do when we die because our daughter does not want this. And, but he goes to Goodwill almost every day.
Mm.
And he just has the collection for himself. He doesn't resell. He's in record collecting groups where he talk about his passion with other people. But, you know, I'm just like, oh, this place is a gold mine. Somebody's really going to love this somewhere down the road. But she's just like, yeah, I made him put all this stuff down here in the basement because I just didn't want to look at it in the house anymore. And they've been in the same house like 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazingly organized. It's not like a hoarder. It's organized. But I thought, all that, it's just overwhelming to me as someone who doesn't collect records. Like, oh, looking through all that at the thrift store just seems overwhelming.
Yeah. So I used to be a huge record collector. Like I said, I was a DJ in college, you know, pre CDs. So I had probably somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 records. And when I moved from Pittsburgh to the Philadelphia area, I had to rent a van just to bring the records. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved from Philadelphia to Maryland, I swore, this is it. This is the last time I'm moving these records. So when we moved from our old house to this house, even though it was only about 3 miles away, I was like, not doing it. So I sold my record collection. And it was funny, in preparing for our chat, I was going through some old sales stuff. And I was like, man, I wish I had held on to those, because I could have sold them for a lot more now than I did, you know. I guess my daughter's going to be 17. So we've been here almost 18 years. So had I held on to them, I could have made a much prettier penny than I did at the time, but at least I didn't have to move them, because records are heavy. They're so heavy.
Yes. Yes. And how do you ship them?
So I buy mailers from Bags Unlimited. So you can, they have mailers that are specific for vinyl, whether it's 45s or LPs. And, you know, I buy the ones that they're corrugated cardboard, but they have like a perforated. So they fit anywhere from like, I think they fit like 1 to 5 records.
Okay.
Most of the records that I sell, you know, one at a time. But if somebody was to buy several, you could fit more than one into a mailer and cut down on the shipping costs. But yeah, Bags Unlimited. I'm sure there's probably somebody on Amazon or eBay that sells the same types of mailers. But, you know, and what I find is that people really appreciate the care that's taken in shipping. You know, like I'll see these people who talk about shipping records in old pizza boxes.
Well, I was going to mention that, and not necessarily old, but
right.
You just buy a pizza box brand mm-hmm. new, and that worked perfectly. You know, back in the day when all this started and people were trying to figure out how to do the shipping, and there weren't all these specialized
right.
packaging available.
Yeah.
It's all it is now. It was like, you had to figure out a Franken box or, you know, that pizza box. I thought that was pretty ingenious though. Mm-hmm. You know, people just go down to their local pizzeria and be like, hey, can I buy 5 boxes or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That was acceptable.
Like I said,
yeah. Not dirty, not used.
Not dirty.
Peas and mushrooms all over it. So, yeah. Okay. Well, we're getting to the end here. Did you want to answer one of the questions at the end?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So the book that I just finished, and like, as I've said, I'm a big movie fan, but I also love reading about the making of movies, like behind the scenes movies. And I just finished a book about the making of the movie Airplane.
Oh, you're kidding.
A great comedy. So it's the three
Stop
guys.
Calling me Shirley.
Right. So I think I think that's actually the name of the book is, you know, Stop Calling Me Shirley. Or,
oh, is it really?
Yeah, something like that. I forget what. I took it back to the library yesterday. I completely forgot to write it down. But yeah, so that's the last book I read was I just read the oral history of the making of Airplane. And it was great because they got the three guys who made the movie, but then they also talked to Robert Hayes and Julie Haggerty, and they have interviews and quotes from Robert Stack and Peter Graves and Leslie Nielsen and, you know, all of the great people who were in the movie. And it was a really interesting, like, I didn't realize that, like, they had worked on that screenplay for like 5 years before they ever got a studio to give them the money to make it and agreed to let them direct it because they were first time directors. They had never directed before. So there was a lot of funny stories in it. I don't know if you know, but there's a movie called Zero Hour that is basically the plot of Airplane. And they happened to record it one night off of late night TV. And because they had a live theater where they would do comedy shows. And so they were always looking for material and inspiration. And they recorded this movie. And it's the same basic plot. It's like the people were on the plane's got to land. There's been food poisoning. And this one guy is on the plane and he has to step up and land the plane. And they basically just wanted to like remake the movie, but do it, you know, very tongue in cheek. And so they gave the script to director John Landis, who had directed Kentucky Fried Movie, which was their kind of comedy troupe, mm-hmm. you know, like Monty Python and stuff. And he read the script and he said, guys, this isn't parody. This is plagiarism. Like, you're just literally like remaking the movie. You can't, you know, there's a fine line between parody and ripping somebody off. So what they ended up doing was they actually ended up buying the rights to the movie Zero Hour for like $2,000. And they could do whatever they wanted.
Okay.
So like that was, you know, I mean, this is, you know, you're talking about late 1970s when they did this, you know, you couldn't buy the rights to a movie for $2,000 now if you wanted to. But that was how they got around basically remaking a comedy version of this movie, Zero Hour. They went and they bought the rights to it. And that's one of the many stories that's in the history of the movie Airplane that you can get.
And I have a couple comments on that. There is a documentary out there, a movie I watched a couple of years ago about, you know, behind the scenes, mm-hmm. because you just don't know what went into making some of these movies and how a lot of these things were just random accidents.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said something funnier than was in the script. And so they used it. But those Peter Graves and Leslie Nielsen were serious actors.
Well, and that was the thing.
Not want to do it.
No, they didn't.
Like,
no,
this is going to ruin my reputation.
That's exactly it.
And it's like now, then, you know, Leslie Nielsen went on to Naked Gun and all those ridiculous, sarcastic movies. And our generation knows him.
Right.
But my kids were, I mean, that was like my favorite movie in the 80s. And I know every word, mm-hmm. every single word. And it comes out sometimes. And some people get it, some don't. But I made my kids watch it when they were in middle school. I'm like, this is iconic 80s. You're going to need to know what these lines mean. So one summer, you know, we sat down and watched the movie. And my son is 27 and he works in a tech job. And, you know, he's working with people in our generation and they'll make references. They'll be like, you know, hey, Johnny, how about a cup of coffee? No thanks or whatever. And he gets it. You know, and he laughs and he gets it. He's like, yeah, my mom made me watch that movie. And now I understand what the older people are talking about.
Well, it's so funny because this friend of mine who's a big film buff, and he's about 11 years younger than me. He was born in 1977. And so we were talking about movies one day and he said, oh yeah, we're going to watch all the airport movies. He has a buddy that he gets together with every weekend and they watch a couple movies. And he said, oh, yeah, I bought the box set. It's got, you know, Airport 75, Airport 77, and Airport 79. We're going to watch them. I've never seen them. And I was like, but you've seen Airplane, right? And he said, oh, yeah, I love Airplane. I said, but you've never seen the airport movies, which is basically where all
but
the
based on, yeah.
And so he and I, we took a trip up to Philly a couple weeks ago to see a documentary, and we were talking along the way. And he said, I can't wait to watch Airplane because I will have a whole new appreciation for the movie having seen all the airport movies. You know,
right. So
you
like, oh, well, that's what that joke's about. Okay.
Right. Like, like sometimes you've got to lay the groundwork sometimes to really appreciate, you know, something else. So, but anyway, it's a great book and I would highly recommend it.
And that movie, was it come out in 1980?
Yeah. Airplane? Yep.
I mean, that makes us feel old. That movie is over, you know, like 40 years old.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, it was not too long ago. It was the 80s.
yeah, wrong. Okay. Well, thank you so much for reaching out and coming on. I enjoyed talking with you and
absolutely
reminiscing about life as an 80s teenager.
We survived.
That's right. But, you know, what goes around comes around and all that stuff we had, concert t-shirts, you know, memorabilia, stuff like that, that we're all kicking ourselves for throwing out, that is valuable.
My wife's Star Trek novel, the novelization from the original Star Trek movie, which she found in a box yesterday.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, thanks again for coming on and we'll look for your sales on the Facebook group.
Thanks, Suzanne. Pleasure talking with you.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, that was really fun reminiscing with someone born the same year I was. Okay, today's trivia question. since Dan mentioned selling some Dunkin' Donuts mugs, when did Dunkin' Donuts start? Here are a few seconds to think about it, and Dunkin' Donuts and their coffee. Right, here's the quick rundown. Bill Rosenberg opened a donut restaurant named Open Kettle in 1948 in Quincy, Massachusetts. In 1950, the restaurant was renamed Dunkin' Donuts. The first franchise of the restaurant signed in Worcester 5 years later. So it took them 5 years to get into franchising. By 1963, the 100th restaurant in the chain opened. Munchkins were released in 1972, and muffins were added to the menu in 1978. In 1979, the 1,000th franchise opened. Gen Xers will remember this, and baby boomers will remember this too. In 1982, the company began its famous Fred the Baker commercials. Remember, it's time to make the donuts. That guy with the mustache and bald head. So he was the Dunkin' Donuts pitch man. And here in 2024, Dunkin' Donuts has grown to more than 13,000 restaurants in nearly 40 global markets. So there's a little bit of trivia and history about the beloved Dunkin' Donuts. And my favorite donut is the, I think it's called vanilla cream. It's not custard pudding. It's like a frosting filling, and it's a filled donut with powdered sugar on top, either chocolate or vanilla. That is my go-to at Dunkin'. Okay, next week, my guest is Abigail, who is a wife, mother, veterinarian, and reseller. She has some really creative sourcing techniques to share, so you won't want to miss that episode. Thank you all for supporting this podcast and tuning in every week. Have a fantastic week on eBay. Bye for now.